Let's talk about prosperity. I think it's a very important thing to talk about, because at least 50% of the news that we always hear and 50% of our mail has something to do with money or the lack of. And if there's not a spiritual help to assist us in our feelings about that and what we want to accomplish in our lives, or put it this way, I'm very grateful that there is a spiritual practice that can help us create a life of abundance and a life that we want to lead. I think it's marvelous that the Fillmores and all the early New Thought people talked about prosperity, and some of the first publications that were printed were about prosperity, because they realized that, and I don't know if the culture has changed all that much since 1890 in terms of, you know, some people have all the money and others don't, and then that got shall get, and then that don't shall lose. And a lot of work still needs to be done in most of our consciousnesses. Not true of everybody, but for most of us, it is true. I always say that this ministry is dedicated to helping you transform your life experience. And one of the things I feel that I've learned is that what most of us are seeking here is a transformational experience in relationship to purpose and money as well. Shortage is not the need, but a transformation in awareness and consciousness is a need, a continuing need that all of us have, and something we can do something about. Often we say affirmations of statements that are truth statements, and that helps to condition consciousness. And as I was thinking about this, and yesterday I was going over my notes, and I thought, I wonder what a good prosperity, a real truth teaching is that we can affirm together. And the first one that I came up with, and just for the purpose of an experiment, I invite you to do this with me. I was thinking, well, most of us go through life thinking everything would be okay if I had more money. I need money, is what I need. So let's affirm that loudly and joyfully together, shall we? Together. I need money. Now, I was working with this yesterday afternoon, and I found that I was going in two directions with this thought, I need money. I would either go in a way where I go, I need money, I need money, I need money. And I was getting so manic about the thought that it was obvious that it was totally preposterous. I don't need money. And the only other way that you can affirm those words is if you go, I need money, I need money, I need money. And that is so ugly that you don't want to go there either. And it took me to the logical place of saying, I need money is not a true thing to say. It simply is not a truth statement that one can affirm without realizing very, very quickly that that is not true at all. There's a hipster's expression, a jazz expression that says, you are so money. Which feels better, you know, to say, Greer, you are money. That feels kind of good. It feels sassy. But it also implies that she's got it all going on. Maybe that's a better thing to say. But I need money doesn't feel good in any way. It doesn't get me any place where I want to be. To say I need money also implies, at the level of subtext, a whole other bunch of things which are icky and I wouldn't want anyone else to embrace. Feelings of, I don't have enough, I am not enough, there's never enough. Now, you know, I'm also a very realistic person. Believe me, I know what dental crowns cost. I know. And when did kindergarten start costing $14,000 a year. You know, we need cash money for stuff in our lives. We're not saying that that's not important, right? But feelings around money are mostly negative feelings. Feelings of there's not enough to go around. W.C. Fields used to have a fabulous expression. He called money the elusive spondulix, which I loved. I thought that was jazzy. There's an insidious dynamic that can that seems to have overtaken a lot of business practice these days, of the bonuses that we hear about, and bonuses driven on the dynamic of you got more than I did. Doesn't matter how much is enough, but if you got more than I got, then I have to get more than you got, or else I don't have enough. Bless their hearts, sports figures as well. You know, boy, I think $10 million a year to play basketball is a lot of money. Call me stupid. I don't know when you needed 12, 14, 20 million a year. And it's all based on this very negative and ultimately life-diminishing dynamic of feeling I won't have enough until I am the boss of you, or I have more money than you do, or it gets crazy. Crazy. What I love about our work here is that I am not here to pump you up. I'm here to ground you in the ground of all being, in the Godhead. And that, friends, is enough. That is more than enough. And when you know what your source is, then all kinds of astonishing things can flow through you and outpicture by means of your life. To say I need money is never a true thing. You might say I need a better idea, and that would be true, and that is a life-enhancing thing. But to say that we need money will always create a climate of neediness. And so we want to do away as best we can, and it does take daily practice, if not hourly practice, to get away from all ideas of need. Lots of material has been written about how to do that, and there's lots of great information and books around. The Secret was a big deal a couple of years ago. Lots of us have the book and the DVD. And there's terrific, important, and good information in that, telling us about the law of attraction, which many of us don't know about, even though that's what we've been talking about for 120 years. But what you give your attention to will increase, is what the law of attraction to. There is a shortcoming in The Secret, however, because it really does leave out the important part of the spiritual component. You can, if you focus on it long and hard enough, attract anything into your life. But if you do not have the consciousness of it, you will not be able to keep it. And it will become a burden to you, and it might become your undoing. You can focus 110 hours a week, if you like, about I need a new Mercedes, I want a Mercedes, and you might attract that Mercedes. However, if you do not have the consciousness of a life that would include that, then you're not even going to make the first payment on it. And therefore, it becomes a nightmare. We see this happening regularly when people win the lottery, yes? That it becomes their undoing and very divisive. We see it become an issue when amongst siblings when money is inherited. I know I mentioned this once before, but when I was a kid, there was a TV show called The Millionaire where Mr. Anthony would have a cashier's check for $1 million. Do you remember the show? And he would go around and he would go to some poor slob and he would give them $1 million and it would destroy their life, right? There was never a happy ending in any of these stories. It ruined everyone's life. And I did not understand as a 10-year-old why that would be. $1 million? And that's when $1 million was $1 million. That seems to be the answer to everything. It is not. Unless you have the consciousness of that, it'll destroy you. So we want to be about the business of creating consciousness where things aren't magically or mysteriously drawn to us, but where the things that we desire are the emergent property of the consciousness we have. This is as deep and complex as metaphysics get, and it's not that deep or complex. But I will say it again. You cannot pray for money or pray for things or pray for good. You might get it, but unless you have the consciousness of it, you can't keep it. You have to be it before you can have it. You have to be of a consciousness where the things you desire are an emergent property of the consciousness you already have. If there is some area of your life that is finance dependent, that you're not crazy about, it is wise to work that situation by looking at it and saying, well, evidently, that is my current level of consciousness about my job, my car, my house, my finances, my credit card debt, my whatever. That is my current level of consciousness. Do you want to change it? You would say, yes, I want to change it. The healing is a spiritual one. It is not a marketing one. Because the competitive desires are always going to say, well, you don't have enough venture capital to do that. Or don't you know how many other people are trying to establish a practice doing that right now? Or, oh my God, why does my child want to go on stage in Broadway? Nobody makes a living on stage on Broadway. Except the ones that do. And why do they? Because they have the consciousness of a career. And what does that mean? They know what the parts of that are, and they're willing to assume responsibility for their life, and they're willing to pay the price. And they do not look at it as an unfair burden, but as that which is required to have that experience. The people, let's say, unlike Rob and Garnet and Beverly, people that do not have any careers in music are people who think that practicing is not fair and it's a burden and they shouldn't have to. Right? It's part of the thing. You do it. You may not always want to, but you do it. As with any other activity, even our relationships at home, right? It's understanding what are the parts of this and being, with equanimity, willing to pay the price. If I get hung up, how do I begin to cultivate some kind of consciousness about it? Well, you know, the answer to every question is consciousness. If it's health, purpose, finances, peace of mind, the answer is always consciousness. And how do I develop the consciousness of the thing I'm seeking? By telling myself, John might not feel like he's capable, but there is something in me that has the consciousness of this. And one says that over and over and over until it becomes self-evident, meaning the thing that I'm seeking to heal, the thing that I'm seeking to create appears in my life. And then you go, yes, I must have the consciousness now. But that is the rehearsal, like a musician, that must happen. all the time. There is no heavy lifting here. But this is work that must go on in consciousness. You can say, that sounds good, but I've got some choices ahead of me, and fear is coming up. Well, one of the first self-help books ever written was Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. That hasn't changed. Okay. What's the fear about? Well, then, you know, the fear is this long list of automatic responses, which are excuses. Well, I'm afraid I won't make any money if I make this choice. I'm afraid I won't have enough if I make this choice. I'm afraid that there's too much competition already. I'm afraid of that. Okay. So is that your excuse for not taking the first step? And the answer is, yeah, that's my excuse for not taking the first step. You get over that? You get over that. Do or do not. You know, that's one of those Yoda moments. Do or do not. There is no try. The other thing is worry. Worry. I know you've heard me say this before, but I do think it's always worth repeating, that worry is your best friend. It's your biofeedback, which is utterly reliable. If you were worried about something, it's because you do not have enough information to make a choice. Well, I'm so worried, I can't help but worry. Yeah, you can't help but worry. There's a little pill called Ativan. It really helps. Ask your physician if it's right for you. If you are worried about a venture, something which money is attached to, should I invest in this? What do I do with such and such? It means that you need more information. That's what that means. Seek out information. I'm worried about my retirement. I'm worried about my IRA. What should I do with it? Well, you can go out and play cards and have lunch till the cows come home and say you're worried about it. Or you can read something or talk to somebody who's a professional and get information. And then you can make a choice. None of this is easy, is it? But it's pretty simple. And for those who have succeeded financially, for those who doesn't seem to be an issue, they have the same stuff that we do. They go ahead and do it. They go ahead and do it. If you have ever had sleepless nights about money, there is something that needs to be healed. Something in you that needs to be healed, that needs to be transformed. And that is the fear of turning from that being the predominant mode of being in the world and transforming that fear into confidence and action of some kind. Now, there are ways to do that, but if it is not done in consciousness, there's no point. So the conscious work has to happen, and that will happen around a set of spiritual practices and changing your thoughts one at a time, changing your limiting beliefs about how life has been unfair and it should not have been this hard, or I should have had X amount of money by now, but you don't. Okay. But before you can go on and begin to demonstrate real prosperity, which includes first and foremost peace of mind, peace of heart, and peace of spirit, is the most important prosperity demonstration you can create. You got to identify some limiting beliefs, get rid of them, and have a practice or two which really does contribute to your growth in consciousness. One of them that we do here is we tithe. It is not required of anybody to tithe. It's something that I hope everybody will know the pleasure of at some point. We don't do it because if we don't do it, like, we won't get into heaven. We don't have any of those wacky rules. All the great teachers have told us it's not about heaven, that's immaterial. It's like, what's happening now? This is it. And how do I experience the kingdom of heaven, which evidently is at hand, but I don't feel that I've got a piece of? How do I? By cultivating this kind of equanimity, a fearlessness which is conditioned by generosity. It's the only way that I have learned for me in my life is to get over selfishness, fear of economic insecurity, is to cultivate at long last a sense of real generosity. And tithing was the way for me. This ministry tithes, 10% of all that comes in goes out to organizations and individuals that bless us. And it's not a fine that we pay, it's a pleasure. This is familiar to many of you, I had to take a class in tithing before I could go to Unity Ministerial School. I resented it bitterly. I thought it was so manipulative, I couldn't believe it that anybody would require that. And I had all kinds of judgment about it because it was not of my culture. It was simply not of my culture. And I was at Unity Village for something while I was in the middle of this class. I had to go to Kansas City. This was well before I was in school. And I met a woman there, and her name was Dorothy. Her name was Dorothy St. Clair. And I was having lunch with her once, and we got to talking, and I was talking about the class and talking about tithing and how much I was resenting it, and isn't it foolish to require it? And she told me her story about how when she started tithing, and at one point when I was highly resistant to hearing anything positive about generosity as a spiritual practice, she looked at me and she said, "John, it's my pleasure." And she said it in such a way that it was counterintuitive to me, and again, not of my culture, because my culture was to hold on to everything. Hold on. And yet, bless her heart, Dorothy, wherever she is, she looked right in my eyes and said, "It's my pleasure." It was my soul took a breath. It knocked my routine right out of my mind. And I thought, how could this possibly be? I relaxed into the practice, and I have tithed ever since, because not because I have to, and not even because I get to, but because it's my pleasure to do so. And such as it is, I don't mind saying from the platform, I have been financially prospered. From that time, when I literally was making zero, but I've made more money every year for the last 10 years. That's where the rubber meets the road. How does it show up in your life? Is it showing up as a larger experience of life? Are you living with more peace and a greater sense of generosity and handling your business? You know what? Yeah. One day at a time, piece by piece. And when we emotionally rededicated ourselves in this ministry to tithing, things have been better for 4 years. It actually makes a material difference. Do you have to do this? No, you don't have to do this. I invite everybody to take this class that I love teaching so much called Keys to the Kingdom, because I'd love everybody at least once in their life to have an experience of tithing. But for those of us that have kept up with that practice, and there are many of us in this ministry, I think I speak for all of us when I say it has made a world of difference. firstly in this peace of mind and fear of economic insecurity. First and foremost. And secondly, you don't miss it. I know when I am about to meet my Maker, what I will not say is, God, if I only had that 10% back. What, are you kidding me? It's probably going to be like, wow, if I'd only given more of myself in my lifetime, more of my time, more of myself to the things that I care about and to the people that I cared about. And what are you holding on to? Those are probably the things that we think about. What was I waiting for? I had a marvelous experience years ago, and I'm going to conclude with this, where I was out in Joshua Tree. Has anybody ever been camping in Joshua Tree? It's great, isn't it? Such a special place. And in Southern California. And I was reading a book called Animal Dreams by Barbara Kingsolver. For some reason, some of you know that, my brother-in-law said, you should read this book. And I took that with me. And there was a statement in the book, which I mentioned in our Keys to the Kingdom class the other night, which almost was a turning point for me in my career choice and in my spiritual growth. And the statement, which I believe this is accurate, one of the characters says, the least you can do in life is to know what you hope for. The least you can do is to know what you hope for. The most you can do is live right under its roof. That was such a piece of prose that went right to my soul. And at first unconsciously, now consciously, I continue to follow that path, to ask myself, what do I hope for in my life, in this ministry? What do I hope for you? I want you to have everything that you hope for, is what I hope for. It's simple. What do I hope for the country, for this region, for the planet? What do I hope for? And am I, to a greater or lesser extent, living under the roof of that hope? How much of that, of myself, am I giving to that? That, for me, was the beginning of that great spiral that gets bigger and bigger and bigger when life gets larger, more interesting, more comprehensive, which is all the definition of abundance and prosperity. And oddly enough, I find I've had all the cash that I've needed to do the things that ought to be done by me. Practice matters. Spiritual practice matters a great deal in our everyday affairs. I want to conclude this with prayer. It's a prayer that you all got, I trust. This prayer for abundance was handed out, written by Emmett Fox. He was one of the great first-generation New Thought ministers. And I thought this would be a marvelous thing for all y'all to have and to keep. And if you're having challenges right now, read this every day. Every day. Make sure you read this and read it aloud. But for today, I'm going to read it for you so you can listen to the language and enjoy this truth teaching, which is, today I accept God's gift of abundance. Today, everything that I am and have that is good is increased. I identify everything I do with success. I think affirmatively. And with all my prayers, I accept abundance. Whatever I need, whenever I need it, wherever I need it, for as long as I need it, will always be at hand. I no longer see negation or delay or stagnation in my undertakings. Rather, I claim that the action of the living spirit prospers everything I do, increases every good I possess, and brings success to me and everyone I meet. Everything I think about and do is animated by the divine presence, sustained by the infinite power, and multiplied by the divine goodness. So it is written, so it is said, and so it is. Amen.